Remember this?
If there is one message that echoes forth from this conference, let it be that human rights are women's rights, and women's rights are human rights, once and for all.
That was Hillary Clinton speaking at what came to be known as the Beijing Conference in 1995. The idea that women's rights are human rights wasn't something that caught on quick. It took years and hard work for the human rights movement to take on issues like violence against women, limits on reproductive freedom, or discrimination in the workplace. Human Rights Watch launched its Women's Rights Division 20 years ago. On today's podcast, we'll look at how far it's come. Reporter Miriam Wells interviewed Dorothy Thomas, who founded the division, and Liesl Gernholz, who heads it today.
Dorothy, just the phrase women's rights in itself was enough to cause controversy back in 1990. Why?
Well, it was an incredible opportunity created by Human Rights Watch just to begin this conversation about the relationship between women's rights and human rights, because there really hadn't been that much formal recognition of that linkage. At the beginning, it was a little bit like walking through the looking glass in the sense that you sort of went in thinking it was self-evident that women's rights were human rights, women are human, and that it would be fairly straightforward to begin to develop the relationship in more depth. But in fact, there was a fundamental question that preceded our ability to do any work, and that was to really show people that the things that were happening to women in the world actually constituted human rights abuses. There was a kind of a default attitude that those abuses, the things happening to women in the home, in the workplace, in the community, even in war, were somehow lesser than or incidental to what was happening more seriously or more generally. So you would have human rights organizations the world over taking up genocide, taking up torture, but they would not be looking specifically at the ways in which those kinds of gross abuses actually played out in the lives of women.
So people just didn't think what was happening to women was as serious as traditional human rights abuses such as torture or genocide.
No, they didn't think it was as serious at all. In fact, there was an enormous amount of worry that Human Rights Watch was diluting its mission and diminishing its effectiveness by taking up these lesser issues.
So what were some of those reactions that you got in the early days? Do you have any good examples of some of the things people would say to you when you brought up women's rights?
Well, one of the funniest things is I used to give speeches on the title, Do Women Have Human Rights? Over and over again, I'd be asked to answer the question, do women have human rights? And to me, this was so bizarre because I'm sitting in the room with all these people, could be the State Department, could be some diplomatic lunch, could be a gigantic human rights meeting. And I have to answer a question, do women have human rights? I used to say, excuse me, but last I checked, I'm human. So I think it's sort of self-evident. But there actually, the stunning thing was it wasn't self-evident. So all the time I would get these reactions where first I had to answer whether or not I was human. And having established that fact, I would actually have to answer questions like, well, my wife is really happy, so therefore I don't know why you people are investigating women's rights in this country, because as far as I can tell from my home life, there really aren't any problems. People used to contest fundamental things with me, like whether a forcible virginity control examination constituted an abuse or whether it wasn't just like, say, going to the dentist.
Liesl, what do you make of that? Can you ever imagine getting reactions like that in your work today?
I think that what has happened over the 20 years is that the work that has been done, including by Dorothy, has given us a platform where when we do go to the State Department or the Human Rights Council in Geneva or national governments, we don't face that overt sexism. I think it's very rare for us to come up in situations where people ask the question, are women's rights human rights? So I think that has been remarkable because it's changed in a relatively short space of time. I think what we continue to face is invidious forms of sexism. I think that we still see not enough women in government. We still see huge amounts of rape in the Congo, and that's been happening for 10 years. So I think that the violations against women continue to happen. But I think what we have now is a platform to talk about them. And I think some people are actually listening.
So at least we have this basic acceptance of the principle, at least, that women's rights are human rights, even if it's not manifested and implemented everywhere.
I think that there is a basic acceptance, even in countries that we still find commit egregious violations against women, that there is an acceptance, at least, that women have some rights. I think it's contested about sort of which ones they have and which ones you can say are not really human rights. You talked about in your introduction about access to abortion. I think that's deeply contested whether that is a right that women should be able to exercise. But I think that there is an understanding and an acceptance internationally that women are human and that they have rights.
So how did you do it? How did we overcome that opposition to get to the position we are today?
one of the most important things for us at the beginning was to counteract this stereotype that the things happening to women did not rise to the level of serious human rights violations. So on purpose and in consultation with the rest of Human Rights Watch, our first report was on domestic violence because we wanted to take away the impression that this was something happening behind closed doors, that it was a private thing, that it was a personal thing, that it was a cultural thing, and really demonstrate that actually this rose to the level of a human rights violation like other violations, that the state had responsibility with respect to it, and that the state had to live up to that obligation rather than treating it as something over which they had no control and for which they had no responsibility.
And I think from my perspective, if you really think about how radical that statement was in the 1990s, 20 years ago, people really did not think that the state had any role to play in protecting women. You know, this was something that happened in their bedrooms, in the kitchens, and that had really nothing to do with the police or the criminal justice system.
Dorothy, tell me what you found in that report.
We worked in collaboration with the Americas Division of Human Rights Watch, and we went to Brazil together to look at the experience of women with domestic violence and how the state was responding. And what we found are repeated incidents of domestic violence, battery, sexual, up to and including murder, where the state either would not investigate it, or when they investigated it, they wouldn't fully prosecute it, or when they fully prosecuted it, they would also often let the guy off. We demonstrated that the state had responsibility for prosecuting, investigating, and pursuing crimes of domestic violence, but also that the state itself had an attitude towards domestic violence, which was, in fact, creating a culture of acceptance or impunity for those kinds of acts.
So the Brazil work showed that by failing to protect women from violence in their homes, a government could be complicit in that violence in breach of international human rights law. Liesl, how important has that idea been over time? How has it played out in the work under your leadership?
Well, I think not just the work that the Women's Rights Division does currently, but I think that work was seminal in terms of developing an analysis and a jurisprudence around a whole range of violations of women's rights. So, I mean, that work sort of opened up a discussion about the many, many, many things that happen to women. And, you know, we have continued to have a focus on violence against women in almost all the reports we do. Regrettably, it has to be dealt with. So work that we've done on maternal mortality in India has included the impact of domestic violence on women's ability to get services, similarly in Zambia. But, you know, we have also been able to begin an analysis of the other things that happen to women, because we're saying, well, if the state is responsible for preventing and responding to domestic violence, what else should the state be doing for women? So I think, you know, it's not just around, its impact went and continues to go way beyond violence.
So if Dorothy's overarching challenge, as it were, was just to get that acceptance of women's rights as human rights, then what have some of the greatest challenges been for you? Where does the really hard work lie for you now?
We have been looking at the human rights dimensions of preventable maternal deaths. We have continued to develop work around women's reproductive rights, because I think that women's ability to make decisions about their bodies and their lives is so central to their ability to enjoy all their other human rights. So we continue to work around access to safe and legal abortion. That continues to be a huge challenge. There's a whole range of things that still need to be done. I mean, it's not in many ways that the issues are diminishing and we can say, well, we're done and dusted with that. I mean, violence remains a huge issue.
Dorothy, how do you feel about how the work's progressed over the 20 years and where we go from here?
I think if you look at the evolution of the work on women's human rights in the world today, the work that the Women's Rights Division does is really seen out there in the world as kind of commonplace human rights work. It's acceptable. I think the challenge we have ahead of us now that we're integrated in that way is to really think about, okay, what is our shared agenda as women's rights activists and human rights activists, or women's human rights activists, or the whole kit and caboodle going forward? Are we capable to really overcome the structural divisions of the past and act like one global human rights movement?
Thank you, Dorothy Thomas. Dorothy Thomas was the founding director of the Women's Rights Division at Human Rights Watch in 1990. And thank you, Liesl Gerntholz. Liesl is the executive director of that division today. For more information on Human Rights Watch's work on women's rights over the last 20 years, please visit hrw.org.
That was reporter Miriam Wells. You can find out more about the history of the Women's Rights Division at Human Rights Watch and hear more audio interviews with innovators in that field at our website, that's hrw.org. And that's Rights Watch for today. Human Rights Watch is an international organization dedicated to defending and protecting human rights around the world. This program was produced with help from Barrett Golding of Hearing Voices. You can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and send us your feedback at podcast@hrw.org. Thanks for listening to Rights Watch. I'm Jesse Graham.